This is UEFA Champions League Match Day Live.
2 years ago, Atletico had glory snatched away by their biggest rival.
There is the equalising goal! Deep, deep into added time in the final. There has been an incredible twist in Lisbon. Cristiano Ronaldo, who won it, will take it. And Cristiano Ronaldo sets the seal on a stunning night for Real Madrid. It's Real Madrid 4, Atletico 1.
The 2016 final is another Madrid derby between two clubs with mean defences and match-winning attackers.
Cristiano Ronaldo on the volley does it again. Griezmann Tenna has scored! Brilliantly taken!
We have a full preview of the final to come on the UEFA Champions League podcast. Massive match is all that's left, and it's Atletico against Real Madrid, just like in 2014. I'm Rob Daly, and in this special preview show, you'll hear from the likes of Gareth Bale and Diego Simeone ahead of the final. We'll tell you all about the UEFA Champions Festival in Milan, and we'll reflect on another wonderful season in the world's greatest club competition. There's so much to talk about with my guest today, UEFA.com's European football expert Paul Saffer and commentator Phil Blacker. Gents, welcome to the show. Phil, starting with you. We're very excited indeed for this final. One you commentated on a couple of years ago.
Yeah, which I think adds to the narrative again, doesn't it, this time around? It really is one to anticipate, that extra rivalry, that local rivalry on the European stage, the fact that they are so familiar with each other, that they did play each other in Lisbon in the final just a couple of years ago. So many extra elements in addition to the fabulous form that they showed in getting this far this season.
And Paul, they're two sides desperate for major silverware, having just lost out on the Spanish league title to Barcelona.
Exactly, they did almost catch Barcelona. Barcelona were clear and then stumbled at around about the same time. They were losing to Atletico in UEFA Champions League. In the end, Barcelona just pipped Real Madrid on the final day. They both would have wanted to win the Liga. They're both out of the Copa del Rey, so the UEFA Champions League is the meagre pickings they've got left.
Don't forget, you can hear every kick of the match of the Giuseppe Meazza right here on Match Day Live from 19:30 Central European Time on Saturday, May the 28th. Write that date on a post-it note and stick it on the fridge, because this one is not to be missed. Live coverage on UEFA.com and on the official UEFA Champions League app. Ahead of the show, we asked you to send in your questions as well for our panel today using at Champions League on Twitter. Thanks for your responses. We'll read out some of your tweets to Phil and Paul later on in the show. So let's start by reflecting on our two finalists' progression to the showpiece, starting with the 10-time champions. Here's Dan Roebuck.
With Rafael Benitez in charge, Real Madrid's Group A record was impressive. Their only drop points came in the goalless draw at second place Paris Saint-Germain, and they cemented top spots against the same opposition at the Bernabeu.
An extraordinary goal! It's Nacho who's got it! What a clever finish from the man who's only just on the field!
And with top spot secured, they could cut loose on match day 6.
Real Madrid are 8-0 up. Yeah, 8-0 against Malmo. It is an absolute thumping.
Zinedine Zidane had replaced Benitez at the helm by the time Real Madrid dispatched Roma in the round of 16.
Cristiano Ronaldo feeds it to James in space, scores, just sticks the knife in, and that surely is that.
In the quarterfinals, Wolfsburg set up a shock.
Strikes it left-footed and scores. Bruno Henrique, cross goal! It's 2-0!
Real Madrid needed rescuing in the return, and there was only one man for the job.
Cross deflected into a dangerous area, and a goal for Ronaldo! Ronaldo's there! 2 for Ronaldo in 2 minutes! Here's Ronaldo with the free kick, he's got it! A hat-trick for Cristiano Ronaldo!
Manchester City kept a Ronaldo-less Real Madrid at bay in the first leg of the semi-final, thanks to Joe Hart.
Bale and Pepe's there. It's a wonderful save by the goalkeeper, and Manchester City survived.
But there was nothing Hart could do about the Fernando own goal, which settled things in Spain.
Oh, there's space here for Bale in on the right-hand side. Little deflection, but Gareth Bale has made the difference.
us.
Yeah, it's obviously an amazing feeling. We got into the final before and obviously we lost last year at the semi-final. So we have experience and delighted to see the ball go in, and it's the most important goal to get us to the final. So yeah, very happy.
Gareth Bale there, he scored, of course, the crucial goal in the final 2 years ago. A reminder of Real Madrid's roots. So they got through the group stage with Paris Saint-Germain, Malmo and Shakhtar Donetsk. And then it was Roma, Wolfsburg and Manchester City who fell to them into the knockout stages. And despite Pauli only being a one-goal margin between the two sides in the semi-final with City, Real Madrid were very dominant over the two legs.
Exactly. Even in the first leg that finished 0-0, once David Silva went off after about 40 minutes, Real Madrid totally dominated. Remember, they didn't have Cristiano Ronaldo. Karim Benzema also went off at half-time in that game. But in the second half, they had chance after chance. Maybe if they'd had those players, they would have got the goals, but they're already dominating there. And then the first half, the second leg was very much the same. I mean, eventually the goal came from an own goal in the end. It was a Bale shot after some good, clever build-up play, deflected in. But even at 1-0, Real Madrid was still having most of the chances. And towards the end of the game, you're seeing the Real Madrid fullbacks pushed right up into the Manchester City half, which you don't usually expect to see when a team's defending a 1-0 lead. And it just shows how more superior in the end they were compared to City.
And it is a 14th European Cup final for Real Madrid. And remember, they've won 10 of their previous 13. And in truth, Phil, I mean, aside from the Wolfsburg scare, where they lost 2-0 in Germany and turned it around, it has been a relatively routine passage to the final for them.
It has. That was the major scare, and you had to fear for them at that stage, but turned it around so spectacularly, of course, in that second leg. The first leg defeat in Germany, though, was only the second time all season in the competition they'd even conceded a goal. They kept clean sheets in five of the six group games under Rafa Benitez, and the three that they did concede against Shakhtar, they were 4-0 up at the time before that late concession. So it has been, I hesitate to use the word routine, but that's kind of how they've made it look, because of, you know, how impressive they have been in getting this far, comfortable against Roma in the round of 16. That spectacular comeback against Wolfsburg, and so impressive in the second leg in the manner they completed that. And then, as you just mentioned, the way that they dispatched Manchester City in the semi-final, it's been hugely impressive, whether it be under Rafa Benitez in the group stage and then taken on, of course, by Zidane in the knockout rounds.
You mentioned the group stage. That game against Paris, the two games against Paris, it helped them finish top. They won 1-0, 2-0 away. They were actually superior, I think, in both games, or comfortable anyway. And finishing top of the group made a big difference to making sure they had a winnable round of 16 game. In a time, of course, when they'd changed their coach, they weren't going so well in the Liga. But in the end, they were the highest point scorers in the group stage. And that really set them up, I think, for the knockout competition.
One of the most impressive aspects of this is that Real Madrid have done this with a managerial change in the middle of the season, as you mentioned there, Phil. Zinedine Zidane, after this many games, had the best ever start as a Real Madrid manager. No Real Madrid manager has started quite like him. But are we seeing an identity to Zidane's Real Madrid, do you think? Or is this still a bit of Benitez, a bit of Ancelotti, the side that won in 2014?
I think it's a little bit early to see exactly where they're going under Zidane. Yes, he's been given a wonderful platform, certainly in this competition, to build on, and has taken up the reins and done that impressively thus far. I think he's helped by the fact he is Zidane. You know, he can almost have a little bit of leeway at the start of this coaching career to make the big calls, to leave certain players on the bench in games. The likes of James Rodriguez, of course, hasn't been starting regularly. Yeah. That's a call that would have been difficult for, I think, a different coach to make. But because of his reputation, his standing amongst the players as well, from what he's achieved at the club in this competition as well, he's been able to make those calls. I think it has benefited the balance of the team, but it's still early days to see exactly the direction that they're moving in.
Yeah, very interesting. And it was something that Ronaldo also said ahead of the second leg of the semi-final, that we really respect Zidane for what he did as a player and that they want him to stay on as coach. So it's a 14th European Cup final, as we mentioned, for Real Madrid. But opponents Atletico are only in the showpiece for the third time. And Dave Beckett looks back on how Diego Simeone's side got there.
Atletico had already guaranteed group stage qualification by match day six, but were still battling Benfica for top spot.
Touched in by Luciano Vietto, and it's Atleti who are going to win Group C. Benfica 0, Atletico Madrid 2.
In the round of 16, Atletico and PSV played out the UEFA Champions League's first ever goalless two-leg knockout tie. But it went from can't score to can't miss in the shootout, with 14 successful spot kicks before.
This is Luciano Narsing, taking no time at all, he's hit the bar! Juan Fran steps up and drives it in, and drives Atleti into the quarterfinals!
It was an all-Spanish quarterfinal, with one-third of Barcelona's superstar strike force clinching a first-leg advantage.
Back to Suarez with a header, and
And what a goal that is from Barcelona. Fantasy football from the UEFA Champions League champions. And they turned it around. It's Suarez at the double.
But neither M, S nor N starred in the return. Instead, it was G.
Griezmann's header! He scored! Brilliantly taken by the go-to man for goals. Griezmann takes it and Griezmann scores! The holders, the champions Barcelona, are heading out.
Atletico faced Bayern in the last four and edged the first leg at home.
He's still going here into the penalty area. Oh, and scores a quite wonderful goal! Saúl for Atletico!
Alonso levelled the tie in Munich before another French intervention.
Griezmann with a chance! Griezmann scores the away goal! Superbly done! And the full-time whistle has gone, and Atletico Madrid are in the UEFA Champions League final again.
We did a brilliant campaign until now, and we deserve to be in the final, and we want to win it.
Felipe Luis there reflecting on Atletico's UEFA Champions League campaign so far. A reminder of their route in the group stage: Benfica, Galatasaray and Astana, and then PSV Eindhoven, Barcelona and Bayern dispatched in the knockout stages. Paul, reflecting on the Bayern game in particular, over the two legs, was it the most Atletico-y Atletico performance that we've seen from Diego Simeone's side to date?
It was certainly efficient. I mean, they weren't defensive all the time, but they certainly stopped Bayern, who were the top scorers in the UEFA Champions League, really creating a lot of chances, certainly in the first leg. And in the second leg, actually, both times, the Atletico goals in both games were in sort of rare attacks that they took very clinically and very well. A brilliant goal from Saúl in the first leg, a tremendous solo goal, which may be the goal of the UEFA Champions League. And in the second leg, that breakaway goal, which was led by Torres and scored by Griezmann. And even though Bayern did get another goal back, and of course, both teams had penalties saved as well, Bayern didn't create huge numbers of chances. And although it probably didn't seem it at the time, Atletico were fairly comfortable considering the situation they were in.
It's hard to find a word to describe how this Atletico team played, because you wouldn't call it negative, even though they do sit very deep. How would you try and explain to someone how they set up that team?
I'd say it's efficient. Because what they do when they've got possession, they try and make the most of it. Actually, I mean, against Bayern, when they had possession, they are often looking to attack quite quickly, try and catch Bayern by surprise. Because you've got a team that's had a lot of possession, playing the ball around, maybe almost losing a little bit of defensive concentration, and that's when they look to strike. Of course, when they haven't got the ball, they're so well organised. Against Bayern, they often had 10 players back, not necessarily back in their box, but 10 players behind the ball, making sure there wasn't space for Bayern to get out wide often, making sure that that channel was broken down. We saw that again against Barcelona. And throughout the competition, they took their chance against PSV. There weren't many chances on either side, but they showed what they could do in the penalty shootout, which was seemed to be coming from quite a long way out. And then Benfica as well, they had to go to Lisbon and win that game to top the group, and yeah, they did do that, and that was very important in making sure they played PSV in the next round instead of the much tougher sort of tie that Benfica got. So all through the competition, they've known what to do. I mean, and they've done so well in two-leg ties throughout Diego Simeone's reign because, of course, they've won the UEFA Europa League in addition to now making their second UEFA Champions League final in 3 years.
OK, let's read out some of your tweets here. Ryan Sketchley wants to know, Phil, is Diego Simeone currently the best manager on the planet? Where does he go next? I think he's going to stay at Atletico, but where does he come into in terms of the bracket full of world head coaches at the moment?
He is right up there for me. It depends a little bit on what criteria you actually apply. I would certainly have him in my top two with Pep Guardiola over recent seasons.
Okay,
and I think
right,
because of what's happened this season and the semi-final that we were just talking about, he probably, at the moment, is right up there for me. Certainly if they go on and win this UEFA Champions League final, then I think you could say with some certainty that Simeone currently is the best coach in the business. And the reason for that is the success he's had with relatively limited resources compared to some of his rivals. Given the individuals at his disposal and the way that the team as a collective, he has them playing, you go back to those two outstanding defensive performances, the second leg against Barcelona, the first leg against Bayern. Mm. They were achieved in similar style, but with entirely different central defensive partnerships. And yet everybody knew their job, and that is down to Simeone. I think Guardiola is up there because of what he's done, because of previously winning this competition. Of course, didn't manage it with Bayern, did with Barcelona, had domestic success with Bayern as well. Trophies-wise, he's probably still just ahead of Simeone. That could change if Atletico do get the big one this time around.
And one thing Diego Simeone has done as well is take players who maybe haven't succeeded elsewhere. Look, Felipe Luis left, didn't really succeed, came back, has been brilliant. Fernando Torres, his form had been wretched, really, when he came back to Atletico. And this season has been superb and has played a huge role in getting them to the final. And there are several players like that in the team. Antoine Griezmann, another player who has totally blossomed, has really started to fulfil his potential. And Diego Simeone has obviously got something out of those players. He's found ways to make them successful.
OK, we'll read out some more of your tweets later on in the show. We've heard how Real Madrid and Atletico made the final, but there are plenty of other highlights from this season's UEFA Champions League.
It's an astonishing goal! He saw the keeper off his line, and he's lobbed him from fully 45 metres! An equalising goal by Florenzi of Roma!
2-0 up to 4-2 down, and now they are level. Mamedi with a goal in that game, so it's 4-4 between Leverkusen and Roma.
Now it's there! They've re-established their lead again! Incredible! And straight away, Wolfsburg back in front, and Manchester United again now are heading for elimination.
Well, they almost certainly are, because PSV are 2-1 up against CSKA. Proper with a low drive from the edge of the box. For a matter of seconds, United were in the next round of the UEFA Champions League, but it looks all over for them now. And it's 2-1 to Ghent now. Milicevic with a fine half volley from the edge of the area. Regardless of what happens in the Mestalla now, Ghent are going through it along with Zenit into the next round of the UEFA Champions League.
Coman's cross is brilliant! Equaliser! Thomas Müller for Bayern to beat Gianluigi Buffon, and it looks as though we're heading for extra time, and they're in front. Bayern have turned it around here. It is Thiago. Coman decides whether to go for goal himself, and he does, and he finds it, and Bayern are heading through to the UEFA Champions League quarterfinals.
Well, that comeback from Bayern against Juventus, absolutely outstanding. Bayern, of course, could not go on to reach the final. Paul, we heard some of the best moments from this season's competition there. And you've already mentioned that Saul may claim this season's goal of the competition, if you like, for that strike against Bayern. But Florenzi's long-range effort against Barcelona, catching Ter Stegen off his line from almost halfway, what's the better goal?
That game, Roma-Barcelona, Roma were being battered there, 1-0 down. This was right at the start of the group stage. That goal totally changed the game. Roma got a comfortable 1-1 draw in the end and went through. And I think I might go with the Florenzi goal, just because it's so unusual to see a goal like that way out on the halfway line. You didn't see something coming. Saul, that was a great individual effort. You could see it building towards the goal. Florenzi's goal had maybe more of a wow factor. Like, there was no way you were going to shoot from there.
Yeah,
no way we're going to shoot from there. It completely threw everything up in the air, and Barcelona were shell-shocked really for the rest of the game by their standards. And OK, Barcelona end up going through. Roma, in the end, probably wouldn't have gone through if it had been for that goal. Atletico may have found a way past Bayern anyway.
Some great moments involving Roma, including the 4-4 draw with Leverkusen, which was an absolutely crazy game. Phil, we heard you commentating on Manchester United Wolfsburg, the game in Germany, the match in Lower Saxony. That was an extraordinary game in itself, because there was so much pressure on Louis van Gaal, if I think back, and Manchester United and the injuries they had going into that game. And what a big occasion it was for Wolfsburg as well.
Extraordinary game, extraordinary night as well, because of the PSV result against CSKA Moskva. At the same time, there were so many different scenarios, weren't there, at the start of the night. Wolfsburg knew they'd win the group with a win. Manchester United knew that they had to better PSV's result. And if I remember rightly, going back to that match day six, the position at the top of the group, the two teams qualifying changed and changed again and changed again. Manchester United were in front and then behind and going out, and then CSKA scored against PSV, it all changed the game. And then ultimately, of course, Manchester United ended up bowing out of the competition going into the UEFA Europa League. It was one of those nights that you remember as a commentator, because it just kept changing. There was drama here. You had to have half an ear on events elsewhere. Fabulous drama that only really these sort of group stage games can provide. And of course, they had repercussions because of what happened. Manchester United missing out. Wolfsburg ending up making progress for the first time, and deservedly so. I think, you know, what tends to be forgotten because of the drama of the night was just how impressive they were.
Yeah, absolutely. And along with Ghent into the round of 16, as we heard there. Let's remind you of who are the top scorers at the moment as well in the UEFA Champions League. Way out in front with 16 is Cristiano Ronaldo. Remember, he has been injured at times in this season's competition. Next to him, 7 behind, Robert Lewandowski on 9. Luis Suarez and Thomas Müller have 8. Antoine Griezmann has 7. And Lionel Messi and Artem Zubar of Zenit, both on 6. And Paul, it's been a season where Ronaldo's been able to push away from Messi in terms of all-time record goal scorers in the competition.
Absolutely. I mean, they started the season fairly close to each other in the all-time race. Now it's 93 all-time UEFA Champions League goals to Ronaldo, 83 to Lionel Messi, or it's 96-86 in all-time UEFA goals. So that century in both competitions will probably be brought up next season by Ronaldo. Maybe even Lionel Messi if he gets a good run at it, because he still scored pretty well, considering how many games he missed Lionel Messi. It's a tribute to him, but of course, on 16 goals, Cristiano Ronaldo only one away from equaling the record he set a couple of seasons ago of 17 in UEFA Champions League season. Of course, setting that in the final against Atletico, I think there's quite a good chance he might do that again. And it just goes to show that consistently, season out over season, he's been able to do that, particularly considering at the start of his UEFA Champions League career, he wasn't actually that prolific a scorer for Manchester United, mainly played out wide. Since then, particularly since his move to Real Madrid, he scored an incredible rate. And of course, domestically as well, has won the ESM Golden Shoe as the top domestic scorer of the season as well. So in a season, I mean, he himself has said this is meant to be a season where I apparently haven't played that well by my standards, but he's still setting new records.
I think he has a bright future ahead of him, certainly. Let's look at some of the team records as well at the moment. Bayern have scored the most goals in the competition so far, 30 goals from Pep Guardiola's side. Real Madrid second on 27 goals. Atletico sixth. They've only scored 16 times on their way to the final. Real Madrid, though, have the meanest defence in the UEFA Champions League. They've only conceded 5. Atletico have conceded 7 from their 12 games so far, which is interesting, Paul, because we think of Atletico as the more defensive of the two teams. How much does this come down to the form of Keylor Navas in goal?
Well, he's played a tremendous part. I think the rest of the defence have played a part. And just generally, the fact they're able to dominate games, the fact that, for example, Paris, a team that freely scored in the rest of the group stage, were really went into their shell against Real Madrid, and other teams apart from maybe Wolfsburg also did, so we didn't see Manchester City really troubling the Real Madrid defence that much. So it's an all-round team performance, but I'd say Keylor Navas all throughout the season has been absolutely tremendous, has really stepped up, and in a normal season, Jan Oblak, you're probably saying him as a remarkable UEFA Champions League performance from him for Atletico, but true also of Keylor Navas. And when Iker Casillas was coming to end of his time at Real Madrid, people wondered, could they replace a figure like that? Would they be like Manchester United after Peter Schmeichel, where it took quite a few goes before in the end they've finally now found someone, sort of long-term replacement after Edwin van der Sar did it for a bit. But Real Madrid have stumbled on someone who wasn't a huge name, but is proving now to be a huge goalkeeper in world football. And I think something else to say about the way their team's played is those 27 goals, Ronaldo's either scored or had an assist in 20 of them. He's actually got the second highest assist total as well.
Not bad at all. Okay, much more to come on this special UEFA Champions League final preview podcast shortly. But next, we'll look back on another European final.
Dizemos não ao racismo.
Nein zum Rassismus.
Nein til racismo.
Nein de racismo.
No to racism.
No al racismo.
Cristiano Ronaldo, Manuel Neuer, Zlatan Ibrahimovic, Arjen Robben, Gareth Bale and Lionel Messi are just a few of the UEFA Champions League stars saying no to racism. European football, united against racism. Respect.
You're listening to UEFA Champions League Match Day Live.
So it's Real Madrid against Atletico in Milan on May the 28th, but a much-anticipated UEFA Europa League final has already taken place in Basel between Liverpool and Sevilla, when there was a place in next season's UEFA Champions League at stake. Chris Parrott reviews the action.
With Liverpool and Sevilla in the final, history was guaranteed in Switzerland. Sevilla were chasing a third straight title, Liverpool a record-equalling fourth competition win. It was the English side who struck first.
Here's Sturridge. It's magnificent from Daniel Sturridge. Liverpool in front.
The lead lasted until half-time, but whatever Unai Emery said at the break worked. Just 17 seconds after the restart, it was all square.
Mariano's done well. Kevin Gamero's grabbed their equaliser. Liverpool are stunned.
The goal changed everything, and suddenly Sevilla were dominant. Only a fantastic save by Simon Mignolet denied Gamero a second. It wasn't long before the Spanish side were in front, though.
It's a brilliant goal! Koke celebrates, Sevilla celebrates.
In his previous 169 games for the club, Koke had only scored 13 times. But just 6 minutes later, Sevilla's skipper struck again to make it 3-1. Liverpool were beaten. No silverware for Jurgen Klopp then, in his first season in charge. And no European football for the Reds next season either. He was understandably disappointed.
They are still not at 100% self-belief. That's what you see in a
in a situation when you're 1-1. Usually it's not cool, but it's not a big problem. And I promise everybody we will be better, because we will use this experience and we will use the time we have for training, and then we will strike back. And I know the whole Liverpool family is in this moment very disappointed. I cannot stand this, but there will be a moment not so far away when we think, yeah, Basel was a decisive experience.
Contrasting emotions for Sevilla. They're the undisputed kings of the UEFA Europa League. A record fifth title, and midfielder Steven Nzonzi was delighted.
Yeah, we won it once again, so three times now in the row. So amazing, great job from the team. That's for everybody, for the supporters, for the club, for everybody.
So congratulations to Sevilla, who will once more take their place in next season's UEFA Champions League group stage. The other 20 teams that at the time of recording have booked their group stage places already from Spain, Barcelona, Real Madrid and Atletico. From England, Leicester City, Arsenal and Spurs. Germany, Bayern, Borussia Dortmund and Bayer Leverkusen. Italy, Juventus, Napoli. Then we have Benfica, Sporting, Paris Saint-Germain, Lyon, Dynamo Kiev, PSV Eindhoven, Club Brugge, Basel and Besiktas, the newly crowned champions of Turkey. Phil Blacker, you've seen a lot of Leicester City this season. You were there for one of Jamie Vardy's record-equalling moments in goal-scoring terms as well. How do you think they're going to get on in next season's group stage? It's going to be great to see them involved.
It really is. It's going to be fascinating to find out. Difficult to call, I think, at this stage. I really do fancy them to make an impression in the competition. It's not really anything that anyone had considered until relatively recently, isn't it? And I think because of that, that's going to play into their hands a little bit. We've seen this season how they've surprised so many teams in the English Premier League. And by the time those clubs really had come to terms with what Leicester were doing, they were almost away and gone at the top, and they generated enough momentum to go on and take this incredible Premier League title. I think we might see, I'm not suggesting that they're going to win the UEFA Champions League next year, but I think we might see something similar in that the teams that they come up against, certainly in the group stages, the early part of the competition, aren't necessarily going to know what to expect. They'll be aware, of course they will, of what Leicester have done in England this season, but actually coming up against it directly for the first time, I think they're going to ruffle a few feathers. I would expect to see them certainly in the knockout stages of the competition.
They'll have one advantage as well in the group stage. Under the rule change that came in last season, they'll actually be in the top group of seeds, because they're one of the champions, won the top seven nations. They probably would have been in pot four otherwise under the former system, because obviously don't have any coefficient points of their own, because it's been a while since they've been in Europe. And that means they avoid Barcelona, Bayern, Juventus, Paris, Benfica and whoever wins out of Real Madrid and Atletico. And if you take those teams out of the reckoning of the teams they could draw against, suddenly the group stage does look a lot more negotiable for them, particularly as almost certainly I think they are going to hold on to the bulk of that squad. It was difficult for the teams in the Premier League. They knew how they were going to play, but they weren't always able to deal with it. And it's going to be the same for their UEFA Champions League opponents as well.
Can't wait to see them involved next season. That's all to come from September, and we'll have it right here on UEFA Champions League Match Day Live. Looking forward to it already. But first, we have the small matter of the 61st European Cup final.
You're listening to UEFA Champions League Match Day Live.
This is the UEFA Champions League final preview podcast with me, Rob Daly, alongside UEFA.com's Paul Saffer and Phil Blacker. We're looking ahead to the big match on Saturday, the 28th of May, a game that you, of course, can hear on UEFA.com and on the official UEFA Champions League app with us on Match Day Live. Before we talk in depth about this year's final, here's a reminder of what happened when these two teams met in the showpiece 2 years ago.
Goalkeeper Casillas has come, hasn't got there, and can't claw it back up the line. It's Atletico who have opened the scoring in Lisbon. Luka Modric with a ball in. There's the header. There is the equalising goal. Real Madrid have done it. Sergio Ramos has got the goal again for Real Madrid. Deep, deep into added time in the final. Di Maria is going all the way into the middle, and the shot hits Courtois, and Gareth Bale has turned it in extra time. It's Gareth Bale who might just have delivered that this summer. Marcelo striding forward into the penalty area. Good save by Courtois, but it's gone in, and that is that. And Real Madrid are champions of Europe again. Cristiano Ronaldo, who won it, will take it, and Cristiano Ronaldo sets the seal on a stunning night for Real Madrid. And there is the full-time whistle. It is La Decima. It is raised by Iker Casillas, and Real Madrid, a dozen years since last lifting the UEFA Champions League, Real Madrid are kings of the competition again.
Well, of course, these teams met last season as well. Real Madrid edged the quarterfinal with a single Javier Hernandez goal across the two legs. So, Phil, you were commentating on that game for Ledesma, and we have a question in from David Goodwin. He wants to know, how much of a psychological impact will the 2014 final have on both sides going into this match this season?
I think it potentially will have an impact because there are a considerable number of players involved a couple of years ago that are likely to start in Milan as well. But I think both teams will try and use it to their advantage. Atletico, they're not short of motivation. Of course, they're not anyway. But those players in particular, and Simeone certainly, and he will try and use it to fuel memories of just how painful it was to come so close against Real Madrid, within seconds, of course, before that extra time. To go one step further this time, Real Madrid will use it. I know there's a lot of the similar players in the side, albeit there's been changes in the coaching staff. They will try and use it to fuel their belief that they've been down this path before. If they go behind in the final, they will be able to draw on that sort of mental resource, that previous experience, to say, you know, we've done it once before, we can do it again. So I think they'll both try and use it in a positive way.
Paul as well, Aditya on Twitter, wants to know, do Atletico have a better chance than when these teams met last time?
Well, they were about a few seconds from winning it last time. I was lucky enough to be there. I was writing on that occasion rather than talking. I do shut up occasionally and pick up a pen or a laptop. And that was, I then had to sort of delete everything I'd written and start again after what happened there. And what it proves is, and what we've seen from their many recent matches, Atletico have dominated, of course, domestically, have not lost to Real Madrid domestically since that final, despite losing that final and losing in last season as well over two legs. It's all very tight between them. And it's inconceivable almost it will be one-sided. I don't think Atletico had an inferiority complex. And the only one thing is, of course, the club's history of getting to those two European Cup finals in 1974, of course, 2 years ago in Lisbon, losing both of them again, having in both cases against Bayern in 1974, they're about a minute from winning it, Bayern equalised. We know, of course, what happened in Lisbon 2 years ago. And so maybe if they're holding on to a 1-0 lead, there might be a few nerves then. But then again, if there's any team in world football right now who you'd back to actually hold on to a 1-0 lead, it probably would be Atletico. So I don't know if it'll that affect them psychologically so much. They must have so much confidence from the way they played and from the teams they've beaten this season, because their route to the final has been far more difficult than Real Madrid's.
Yeah, I looked at some of the players who did play in the 2014 final for Atletico who've left. So since that, Courtois, Miranda, Raul Garcia, Diego Costa, David Villa, Sosa, Alderweireld and Adrian Lopez have all left the club since then. So let's focus once more on 2016, and we can hear from Atletico head coach Diego Simeone and first goalkeeper Jan Oblak, who's been a crucial figure in their campaign so far.
I feel great. I think all the team, all Atletico fans, we are happy today. So we are in the final, and final is one game. Everything is possible. So this is what we want since the beginning of the season, and it happened. And now we need to wait for that game, and let's see what happens.
Well, I'm very happy for my team. We've worked really hard in the last 4.5 years. We've played a UEFA Europa League final and a UEFA Champions League final. Now we've got 10 new players, and it's no coincidence they are playing so well. It just shows the ambition of this club. We have players who are really behind us. Juan Fran, Koke, Vieto, Griezmann, Fernando, Felipe. They represent this club. The truth is, we love the way we play, and we're in another final. And we want everybody to support us in this final.
It's worth noting as well, since the 2014 final, Diego Simeone has only lost once in 10 matches, I think it is, against Real Madrid. And he's already got one over Zinedine Zidane this season with a win at the Bernabeu. I mean, it's an impressive recent record, Paul, and surely that'll have a factor coming into this.
Well, you'd have thought so. I suspect, actually, when you talk about form, guys, I mean, two teams know each other as well. I've got the strong feeling that once they get past that line, all of that's out the window, really, and that won't be in their mind. But what we do know is it's two teams that are very, very familiar with each other. They've played so often in recent years. They played so often just last season in every competition they seem to come up against each other, usually over two legs, Atletico generally having the edge domestically. Real Madrid, of course, with all the players that know how to win in this European final compared to Atletico, who've never won this competition. Don't have many players apart from Torres who have experienced winning the UEFA Champions League, but it probably won't be that different to them to any of their league encounters once they're actually over the line and playing the game, because they'll be up against players that know so well the individual battles. Everyone knows what they're doing. They all know their roles against each other so much. I don't know how many surprises Zidane or Simeone could have for each other. Simeone doesn't usually change how he plays that often because it's just so effective and so difficult to deal with. He could probably name his starting 11 a week early, and it almost wouldn't advantage Zidane at all because it doesn't make them any easier to deal with. and equally Real Madrid. I mean, depending on who ends up fit, the way Cristiano Ronaldo has come back since his injury, the way Gareth Bale has been playing recently and the way they've been defending as well. It doesn't really matter how they set up. It doesn't really matter what they're thinking about their past games. This is a team in form.
For the team news for Atletico, we know that Thiago's missed most of the season with a broken leg. Real Madrid, if they are fully fit, Phil, I think we know exactly who's going to play. And at the heart of the midfield would be Casemiro, who's been outstanding since Zidane put him into that defensive midfield role.
He's kind of been the chief beneficiary, hasn't he, of the change of coach, really, particularly in this competition. And what an important role he has had, because for me, he's the one that provides that balance to the team, really. They've got so many attacking players that we all know about who provide the flair and the goals. And yet Casemiro has really helped, I think, anchor that midfielder and provide those players with the platform to press on, to really show what they can do. And that's come to the fore in this competition, I think, even more so, really, than in the Spanish Liga.
I mean, you mentioned it earlier on, a massive call to not play James, who they spent a lot of money on and was one of the stars of the last FIFA World Cup, and Isco, who's one of the best technical players. He's in the Spain squad for the UEFA Euro 2016. I mean, he's had to make big calls, leave big players out, and he's managed to stabilise that dressing room a little bit.
He has, because of the status, as we kind of alluded to, that he has. I don't think many coaches would have been in that sort of position. But also, you know, those players that you mentioned who probably aren't going to start, James Rodriguez and Isco, also came off the bench in the 2014 final. To have those in reserve, if they do need to load the attack and go in chase of an equalising goal again, all over again, you know, it's a very useful option, isn't it, for Zidane?
And obviously, he's had the advantage as well of being able to switch around this team. There's no one in the Real Madrid team who's actually played all 12 games of the campaign. Cristiano Ronaldo would have done had he been fit for that first leg at Manchester City. They never drop him, just like Barcelona never leave out Lionel Messi voluntarily, where you've got people like Gabi and Saul have both played every minute. And of the players that have run the most in UEFA Champions League, Gabi, Griezmann, Koke, the top three, Saul, six. So those are players that have worked much harder. Real Madrid have been able to rotate them more. And if you look at the bench as well, they're probably going to be more players on that Real Madrid bench who are game changers, whereas Atletico a bit more reliant on that first 11.
I think that actually, though, could work in Atletico's favour, because they have that understanding. This is, you know, asking these players to go just one more time in the game that can define their season, certainly, but also maybe define a generation as well. The fact that Real Madrid have chopped and changed a little bit, yes, the players might be fresher, but I don't think this is an occasion where that necessarily is going to be the major issue. It's the collective, it's the understanding as a team that Atletico have because of that consistency of selection, I think, that could work in their favour.
Adicha Shirde wants to know, Paul, who is Atletico's key player? And Adicha mentions Anton Griezmann and Gabi in their question. So who do you think is their main man?
I can't disagree with those choice. I mean, Griezmann, in as much as he's been the player that has been basically scoring all of their goals, Fernando Torres has started to chip in. But I would actually say Gabi. I mean, if you look at 3 years ago, 2 years ago when they got to the final, this time it's been about what's happening in the midfield is Gabi, Koke and Saul, with Gabi absolutely at the heart of it, directing matters, helping out the defence, starting the attacks. I think he's really the fulcrum, and no one's run further in the UEFA Champions League. Very few players have played more minutes this season than him in the UEFA Champions League. Is tireless, he's always going to be working, and he's got a footballing brain as well, and I think he's really at the heart of it. And the other name to mention, obviously, is Oblak at the back in goal.
Yeah, I saw quotes from Griezmann actually ahead of the final saying he believes he's taken it to another level this season. We certainly saw that in Munich. Meanwhile, the former Real Madrid midfielder Guti says that the 2016 final will be tight.
I think it's going to be quite evenly matched. If we talk about how each team is going to play, we're going to attack and they'll wait for us in defence and counter-attack. Atletico Madrid are also good at pressing high up the pitch, as well as keeping the ball. They can do both things. I'm sure it's going to be a very emotional, high-quality match, and hopefully Real Madrid will win.
Well, I think we can expect it to be tight. Atletico aren't invincible, Phil, and we've even seen that in this season's competition, is over the course of their run to the final, they have actually lost three games. So there is a way through for Real Madrid.
There is. I think the resilience of the way that they've bounced back from some of those defeats has been impressive. That might be, of course, a different dynamic in a one-off 90-minute match. I think the surprise early on in the group stage was when they lost at home to Benfica. I was commentating on that game. I think it was the first time Simeone had lost a home game in the UEFA Champions League as the Atletico coach. And and yet they responded to adversity there by going on to win the group. But that match did prove, you know, catch them at the right time, they are beatable. I think they've got better, though, and learned actually lessons from that particular defeat and got stronger and stronger as the competition has gone on. The away goal, of course, in the defeat against Barcelona proved important. So, yes, they're beatable. Teams can score against them, but they just have to work so hard to do that. Of any teams with the attacking talent in the world, you would have thought Barcelona and then Bayern would have found a way through. You can say the same of Real Madrid. Of course, you can in the final. You know, I guess you can probably tell where I'm leaning to here. I think Atletico are going to be a little too strong. There are chinks in the armoury. Of course there are. Any team in the world has those. But I think what Simeone has done is minimise them more effectively than any coach in Europe at the moment.
If Real Madrid can stop particularly Griezmann scoring, if they can stop those counter-attacks, which has been their main source of goals in the games where they've been up against it, there is a chance that Real Madrid can stop them scoring. And it's extremely difficult, even if you're Atletico Madrid, to stop a team with Cristiano Ronaldo, Gareth Bale and everybody else scoring.
What Atletico have done so well, though, is always find a way to win, particularly going back to that PSV game. And I know you can say it came down to a penalty shootout, but I still think you can read something into the mentality of the players there and that will to win. Second season in succession that they got through on penalties at that stage of the competition. Again, for me, that was the mental strength coming through. And yes, PSV were excellent in that shootout as well, and it went the distance, but it was still Atletico somehow who found a way to get through it, and they've done that, and I think improved as the knockout stages have gone on.
Okay, so Phil thinks Atletico are going to win. Paul will come to you before the end of the show for your prediction for the final. And remember, you can hear it on Match Day Live, Saturday the 28th of May, live on UEFA.com and on the official UEFA Champions League app. We've got full match commentary and we'll be on air from 19:30 Central European Time with the best build-up and big name interviews, key reaction, and there will be a podcast to that available after the game. Well, once again, the city hosting the final is also the home of the UEFA Champions Festival across that weekend. From Thursday the 26th until Sunday the 29th of May, there will be loads going on in Milan, including a free photo exhibition that's a pictorial history of the European Cup. And some of the competition's great figures have been telling us about their picture-perfect moments.
Former Milan midfielder Roberto Donadoni on the 1994 final.
This picture represents an important rivalry in those years. We won a UEFA Champions League against Barcelona, but also in the previous years, it represented a clash of the titans. And when you were playing in Barcelona or in Milan, those shirts stood for something extraordinary and unique. Playing against those teams was great, as it was the only way to understand your worth and your abilities.
Ibrahimovic on his hat-trick goal for Paris Saint-Germain against Anderlecht in 2013.
When you play away, normally you hear whistles against you, or if you do something good, you don't hear somebody clap their hands or something, because it's the away team, so they're not in favor for that. But after my third goal, the whole stadium stood up and was clapping, so I was a little bit taken by the moment, so I was very, very happy at the same time, and I was like applauding back to them, and it was a special feeling.
Former Inter man Esteban Cambiaso on the 2010 final.
Well, it was quite something. Inter hadn't been in a UEFA Champions League final for quite some time. Bayern had been and had also got so close to winning it. So if you add all that together, you can imagine. Then add to all of that, we were playing in the Santiago de Bernabeu, one of the greatest and most spectacular stadia in the history of European football. As footballers, you really couldn't ask for more.
Images of Donadoni, Ibrahimovic, Cambiaso and many more will be on display in that special exhibition at the UEFA Champions Festival in Milan. There will also be loads of football-themed activities for families and adults throughout the day and into the evening, including competitions and the chance to meet some UEFA Champions League greats. Plus, on Friday, May the 27th, there'll be the ultimate champions match at 1800 Central European Time, followed by a great public concert in Piazza Duomo. The festival pitch will also showcase some of Europe's best amputee players, and we can speak to Simon Baker, the captain and founder of the Irish national team, as well as the general secretary of European Amputee Football Federation. Simon, thank you so much for joining us on the show. Can you tell us a little bit more about the federation itself.
OK, the European Amputee Football Federation is fairly new. It was first established in 2015 with an integral congress of the European Amputee Football Federation, which took place in Dublin in Ireland. The gathering for us that day marked the creation of a new federation. And not only that, it's a milestone in the history because we got UEFA support. Now, the aim of the European Amputee Football Federation is to promote amputee football in Europe. And the idea is to give any person who's an amputee or a limb-affecting disorder the opportunity to access amputee football at grassroots, club and national level. The European Amputee Football Federation hopes that as a governing body of amputee football within Europe, that we can set the guidelines for federations to follow, making our organisation professional and laying down the foundations for a future for our sport within Europe. You know, with the help of UEFA funding, just in 16 months, we've been able to provide help and support to new countries that are looking to set up amputee football federations. Back in February, we ran a European International Junior Amputee Camp in Dublin, and we brought 40 kids from around Europe for an intense training weekend. You know, at the moment, we've already got on going on our European Amputee Football Development Week, where each country are encouraged and have got funding to sort of promote the sport within their country. And that runs from the 14th of May to 12th of June. So this is all great for us, you know. And the future for amputee football looks great, you know, at the moment.
Simon, can you outline exactly what problems do amputee players have in terms of using facilities for football?
Well, to be honest with you, we don't find there's too many problems with the facilities. For our game, all we need is a bit of open space, a ball, and some crutches, you know. I suppose if we were to say that with facilities, yeah, some of the players getting in and out of the shower, it could be awkward, you know, because they kick off the leg and they're hopping in and out of the showers with one leg. But I think when we talk about facilities and training, the biggest problem for us is some of the players have to travel long distances to come to training. So, I mean, it has been known across different countries, you know, where some players are travelling between 2 to 6 hours to go to training weekend. So this is why we're hoping to set up leagues within and hopefully get football associations involved around Europe so that they'll come on board and, you know, we can set up leagues within these countries so players are not travelling long distances, you know.
Simon, how rewarding is it? Because I imagine some of these men and women think, I'll never get to play football again. How rewarding is it to get those people on a football pitch?
Just take the junior camp, for instance. We brought 40 juniors to Dublin. And to be honest with you, it was very emotional, you know.
We were very
professional and everything like that. But the one thing we found that even all the parents were saying, suddenly the kids didn't feel different anymore, you know, because they were among other amputees. Some people were birth defects, some people were trauma. I think amputee football and sport in general breaks down barriers, you know, and it brings us all together. And the thing is, we don't talk about losing a limb or what happened to you, you know. What we talk about is football, and football is our passion, and, you know, it's a language we all understand. And even that, when you think we brought 40 different kids from around Europe, all speaking different languages, and only for Google Translate, they couldn't communicate. But there they were, you know, football speaks for itself.
You had a great platform to raise awareness at the UEFA Champions Festival in Berlin just a year ago. Can you tell us about what that was like and what the feedback was from that event?
To start with, it was just a great honour to have our sport represented at the UEFA Champions Festival. We had two countries, Poland and Spain. There was a good crowd watching the game, and most of them have never seen amputee football played before. So the funny thing about it was, is as the players went to walk on the pitch, you could see people's disbelief of, you know, the rules of amputee football. The goalkeeper only has one arm and outfield players, one leg missing and they're on a set of crutches. So people looked in disbelief as these players went onto the pitch on crutches, missing a leg. And you could see them sort of thinking, well, what's going to happen here now? But within a couple of minutes of the lads starting to have a kick around and everything, you know, they had the attention of the crowd when the game actually started and they saw the skill and ability of these players, you know. And I think the thing is, players playing at this level, people have to realise, you know, we're very professional in what we do. When we play football, we want people to go, wow. We don't want people to go, ah, you know. So we're very professional. And if you know, it's like anything, you know, the way I always look at it, you know, and I say to our players in Ireland, I can do a bit of what Robbie Keane can do, but I bet he can't do what I can do on crutches.
Simon, thank you so much for joining us on the show.
Not at all. Listen, thank you very much.
That's Simon Baker of the European Amputee Football Federation, who will be showcasing the skills of amputee players on the festival pitch in Milan ahead of the final. There's loads of great stuff to see and to do at the UEFA Champions League's official free festival from Thursday the 26th to Sunday the 29th of May around the final, which of course is on the Saturday. Okay, turning our attention back to the 2016 UEFA Champions League final alongside me, Paul Saffer and Phil Blacker. Paul, we've had lots of people tweeting in their questions for today's show, and we've been going through as many of those as possible, and we've had a prediction from Phil already in terms of who he thinks is going to win the final. Sita Mohammed wants to know, Paul, which team do you think is going to win and why?
That is a good question, Sita. It's so, so close. Now, what I love about this game, because there's a two-week break for both teams, they're not in the Copa final, it's like the Super Bowl, with this 2 weeks of anticipation and build-up, and I'm building up towards, if only to go against Phil, to say, if you're going to ask me to make a case for Real Madrid, to make a case for a team with Cristiano Ronaldo, to make a case for a team with Gareth Bale, to make a case for a team with Kayla Navas in goal, I think I can make that case. They're the team with the winning history. They might just have that tiny little psychological edge of knowing what it's like to win the UEFA Champions League final, so many of their players will. I slightly edge towards Real Madrid.
And if Zinedine Zidane can win it, Phil, he'll only be the seventh head coach to have won it as a player and as a boss of a team as well. And you would have thought he would establish himself a fairly secure position as Real Madrid head coach going forward as well.
Particularly, yeah, if it comes within months of starting his managerial, yeah, his coaching career. I mean, what an opportunity for him. Yes, he was given an impressive platform, I think, in that respect, in this competition by Rafa Benitez. And he has that popularity amongst the players and fans as well. But yeah, you're right. If he can start his tenure with a UEFA Champions League success as a coach, having been, of course, so integral to certainly the 2002 success, that wonderful goal in the final, it will only further cement his legacy, won't it? Coaches at Real Madrid don't generally tend to get a lot of time, do they? But it would put him in a stronger position, I think, than anybody has been in that particular job for quite some time.
Phil and Paul, thank you very much supporting Atletico and Real Madrid respectively in this year's final. I'm going to sit on the fence and stay with that. So Matchday Live returns on Saturday the 28th of May for the big one. We'll have full commentary as Real Madrid take on their city rivals Atletico at San Siro in Milan. Our programme begins at 19:30 Central European Time with all the best build-up and big-name interviews. And then afterwards, we'll bring you all the key reaction to what's sure to be an enthralling game. We'll be live on UEFA.com and on the official UEFA Champions League app, so you can listen to us on your Android, iPhone or BlackBerry devices. And don't forget that there'll be another podcast to download after the final with the best analysis of the showpiece. Keep tweeting your thoughts to at Champions League using the hashtag MatchdayLive. Thanks for your messages today as well. But for now, it's goodbye from Paul Saffer, Phil Blacker and myself, Rob Daly. And we'll leave you with a few of the players who could be the match winners in Milan.
Griezmann, he scored! Tapped home by Gareth Bale.
So all for Atletico.
Ames in space scores.
It is Koke with the goal.
Big chance, Karim Benzema all the way across the face of goal. It's a wonderful finish.
Fernando Torres scores. A precious away goal for Atletico Madrid.
A hat-trick for Cristiano Ronaldo. And you knew it had to be Ronaldo again.
You've been listening to UEFA Champions League Matchday Live.